From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up, a solar developer has submitted an application with New York State to build a large-scale solar and battery energy storage facility in Sullivan County. If it's approved, it would be the largest solar project in the Catskills. But local folks are raising concerns. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar is covering this story, and we'll be talking to her coming up. We also have a big update on the care center at Sunset Lake, because the Sullivan County-owned nursing home's pausing new admissions after Infinite Care announced it's ending its consulting role. Patricio Robayo checks in with Sullivan County Democrat reporters for the latest. But first, we do have breaking news concerning the big 20th anniversary celebration at Bethel Woods on Friday. The Beach Boys with original member Mike Love were set to headline, but today, just a couple days before the event, we learned they are not coming. However, the show and the big day-long party will still go on. The biggest difference? This formerly ticketed event at the site of the original Woodstock Festival will now be free, proving not only that history does repeat itself, but sometimes it doesn't even bother to change its address. To find out what this means for folks who have tickets and everybody who doesn't have tickets and what will be going all day at this free event and how Bethel Woods is inviting the community to celebrate 20 years of the Center for the Arts, I spoke with Bryn Van Horn, Integrated Marketing Manager for Bethel Woods. Bryn, welcome to the Local Edition.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and I imagine it's a pretty busy day with this breaking news. First, can you tell us what happened with the Beach Boys performance that was scheduled to be part of Bethelwood's big 20th anniversary celebration on Friday?
Yeah, so on Friday, July 24th, we have our Bethelwood's 20th anniversary celebration, which is a day full of activities, music, fireworks, giveaways, free museum entry, all the fun stuff. And you know, the Beach Boys were slated as our headliner, but things happen and life happens, and they have had to postpone their upcoming performances, which includes our performance on Friday. But not to worry, we will still have music all day, and we'll have a headlining set by Herman's Hermits starring Peter Noon.
But there's a lot more going on besides just the music as well, right? I mean, the celebration's still happening, right?
Yes, the celebration is absolutely happening, and I'm so happy to say that it's actually free for anybody who would like to join us. The gates will open at 2 o'clock. All the fun will start at 2:15, right on the dot, with a performance by Jake Nelson. And the fun will happen for the rest of the day up until about 9:15, when we'll have fireworks as a grand finale. But we'll have free museum admission if you want to check out the museum at Bethel Woods and study up on all things 60s and all things 1969 Woodstock Festival. We'll have giveaways with lots of fun items. We'll have, you know, crafting activities, lots of family-friendly things going on. And we also have $20 camping that we're offering as well for car and tent camping if anyone wants to stay the night. And all of this will be happening on our upper campus. We'll have two different stages. We'll have the Horizon stage, and we'll also have our community stage. And on the Horizon stage, we'll have performances by Remember Jones, the Chris Rabe Band, and like I said, Jake Nelson.
Okay, so there's a lot of music going on Friday.
There's a lot of music going on. And we'll also have some really special performances by some of our really local Bethel Woods talent, like our Rock Camp Ambassador Band, who actually learned how to play their instruments right here at Bethel Woods, which is very special.
People had been buying tickets for this event. It's now a free event. This is actually, historically speaking, a familiar situation for the site of Bethel Woods. But
it is.
What can you tell ticket holders about any kind of refund process, anything like that? How would that work?
Yeah.
What should they do?
So if you have a ticket to Friday's activities and show and celebration, not to worry. Refunds will be coming your way, but you are more than welcome to still join us for all of the fun. And refunds will be processed automatically and taken care of. If you have premium parking that you paid for, that will also be refunded into your account. And if you want to repurchase premium parking, you're more than welcome to, but all of those refunds will be processed automatically.
And I know you ran down like various activities you got going on and lots of music. Yeah. I'm wondering, are there any special exhibits or activities or anniversary connected things or moments that people should be looking out for?
Ooh, that is a really good question. So at the Museum of Bethel Woods, if you want to take a visit over to the museum building and use that free museum admission on the day of, it's great to learn about the history of Woodstock and the historic site of Bethel Woods, and then come out of the museum and go over to the celebration and see where Bethel Woods has evolved into in the past 20 years and how it's evolved since the Woodstock Festival. And we'll be giving away lots of fun items that are branded with 20th anniversary iconography. And so you'll have some free Bethel Woods swag if you're one of the first few hundred people to enter the celebration.
I guess Bethel Woods is holding a celebration, you know, in part because it's not just about what Bethel Woods does at Bethel Woods, but it's also about the communities within which it operates. This seems like an opportunity to really engage a community, you know, for all the support that folks have been showing over the past 20 years. Is that part of the angle here?
Oh my gosh, of course. And, you know, with today and the last minute schedule change of the Beach Boys no longer being able to join us for our day of celebration, we're so grateful to everyone who has shown us love and support and still wants to come out and spend the day with us and celebrate our birthday alongside us. And so much of what we do is for the community, and we love seeing everybody come out, the joy on their faces, everyone's dancing and singing, and we're hoping that Friday will be just that.
Just a couple more logistical questions. With this change in the lineup, are there any changes or updates that folks should know about in terms of parking, entry, schedule, or timing, any of that, when they should arrive, things like that?
Yeah, so everything was scheduled as 2 p.m. Prior to all these changes happening, and showtime still starts at 2 p.m. So there'll be a whole day of activities. Everything starts at 2. Float in when you'd like to. There will be things going on all day. Like I said, lots of different music, lots of different activities, and things going on all around Upper Campus.
So people can come out even earlier, like before 2 o'clock, or they can come out later as they like. It's really flexible.
Absolutely. It is flexible. Yeah. You know, if you have summer Fridays, get out of work when you can, come join us. Whatever fits with your schedule. We will be open from 2 to headlining showtime with Herman's Hermits starring Peter Noon.
All right. Well, Bryn Van Horn, Bethelwood Center for the Arts, thank you for taking the time on what is very much a busy day for you. And I wish you all the best at the celebration itself.
Thank you so much, Jason. Pleasure to chat with you.
And just a reminder, in case you missed it there, Bryn said that all of these activities are happening on their upper campus. What that means is nothing is happening down at the big pavilion, the big stage or the big lawn. The 20th anniversary celebration will take place on and around the Horizon stage, which is general admission. There are no tickets. Folks will be allowed to exit the venue and re-enter throughout the day, but you will need to go through security anytime that you do enter. Now for our next story. A solar developer has submitted an application with New York State to build a large-scale solar and battery energy storage facility in Sullivan County. And if it's approved, it would be the largest solar project in the Catskills and Hudson Valley region. But some residents and officials have raised concerns, notably environmental risks, as well as ethical issues involving some property owners. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar has been covering this story. She spoke with Tim Bruno live this morning on Radio Chatskill.
This solar project has actually been in the works for years. It's just that the solar developer, RWE, just submitted their application with the state actually on Monday. So essentially, this solar developer, RWE, filed with the state's Office of Renewable Energy, Siting and Electric Transmission, or ORES, on Monday. If it's actually approved, the project would be actually the largest utility scale solar project in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley full, you know, area. The project itself would span between the towns of Forestburg and the town of Thompson, and it would sit on about 1,200 acres of land, so a significant amount of land in the county. The solar project itself, in terms of how much land would actually be on the solar arrays. It's really about 300 acres that would have actual solar panels. The 900 other acres would kind of be untouched for a number of reasons. Maybe the land was too slopey, too stony, not fertile for necessarily building solar panels, building, you know, mounted ground panels on it. Just a little bit about the surrounding areas and what areas actually already have solar projects. So, for example, in Greene County, that's where the closest permitted solar facility exists in the Catskills region. It received an ORIS permit. It's the Flint Mine Solar Project, and that's about 400 or so acres. So the project that was submitted in Sullivan County is actually three times as large, for
huge.
Example. Yeah, it's huge.
Some residents and local officials are flagging concerns about this project, environmental risks and ethical concerns over the involvement of some property owners. We'll talk about those environmental risks, but let's talk about who owns the project's property.
Yeah, a lot of folks that I've spoken to are not happy about the project, as you mentioned, for environmental and then also ethical concerns. So the project site is owned by a number of property owners, but notably one of the project property owners is Walter Grigliano, who serves as Sullivan County's IDA attorney. He's also a pretty prominent figure in the community because he also owns the Catskill Mountain Sugar House.
And IDA is the developmental agency.
Yes, yeah, so the IDA, thanks for reminding me. So the IDA is pretty much the local agency in Sullivan County tasked with like promoting economic development, attracting businesses, also offering financial tax incentives like pilots in case a developer wants to come in. So Walter Grigliano owns a significant portion of the project, and several people I spoke to raised concerns about, you know, favorable economic development conditions in which maybe the IDA, for example, would grant a pilot for this project, even though Walter Grigliano is, you know, the property owner himself. I did reach out to Mr. Grigliano, and he said, you know, he was unable to speak to the specifics of the lease terms because the lease contains a very strict NDA. But he said in an email to Radio Catskill that he would not be involved in representing or advising the IDA if the project owner approaches or applies to the IDA. I also reached out to the Sullivan County IDA themselves, Jennifer Flatt, who's the executive director. And she said, you know, the Townline Solar Project hasn't reached out to the Sullivan County IDA yet, and the project is not currently before the board for consideration. However, you know, just because, you know, the project hasn't reached the IDA itself doesn't mean that there haven't been discussions about solar project incentives, you know, battery energy policies or discussions. And when I pushed Flatt to see if, you know, if Mr. Grigliano or any of the IDA members have been involved in these discussions, she declined to comment or questions.
And nothing illegal going on here, just ethical concerns given the folks involved and
exactly
how large it is and the different, you know, multiple agencies, I guess, involved in all of this as well.
Yeah.
How have local communities responded?
It's... You know, I'll say that overwhelmingly, at least the residents that I've spoken to, people are not happy about the project. I've went to multiple county and town board meetings in the towns of Forestburg and then also in the county meetings that I attend every Thursday. And people are very concerned specifically about the environmental concerns. The proposed project sits on about 133 wetlands, 9 ponds, 27 vernal pools, and 83 stream segments, including Melody Lake in, I believe, the town of Thompson. It's also just several hundred yards from the Neversink River, the Neversink Gorge. So one person I spoke to, his name was Christopher Titus. He's a biologist in, you know, the local area. And he was saying that, you know, any changes to the wetland or the environment has a significant impact on wildlife, on the fish in the area. It's really these small changes that can really affect an environmental area, for example.
And it's a lot of animals. It's a lot of wetlands, as you mentioned. It's also old growth forest in parts of it. How are folks from the developer responding to these concerns?
Yeah, so I reached out to RWE, and they said that they've been in regular conversation with Sullivan County's officials, the local fire departments, the IDA. They hosted a community town hall in Monticello last year. And I'll say that one thing to note is that I reached out to the county, Sullivan County's Commissioner of Planning and Community Resources, Heather Brown. And this is new to the county. This is the first time that they've actually had to deal with navigating a utility scale solar project of this size. Something to keep in mind is that ORES, which is the state agency who manages the permit applications, that agency was only created in 2020, which is it's not that long ago.
Yeah, and again, that's the Office of Renewable Energy Siting and Electric Transmission, commonly known as ORES. We're talking to Kimberly Izar, a reporter here who's been covering the proposed solar project in Sullivan County, which would be the largest in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley, and how it's drawing some environmental and ethical concerns. Kim, we've been hearing a lot about these solar developments in New York and Pennsylvania. Why are we hearing so much about them, and why is there so much fierce local opposition to most of them?
Yeah, I'll start with the local opposition. I mean, the number one thing that I often hear from residents is they're concerned about these solar farms because it's going to eat up all of the farmland that we have in the United States. And ORES, which is the state agency kind of tasked with managing these solar projects, they actually came under fire just last month because the Trump administration made that same accusation and said that, you know, ORES is allowing these solar projects to use up all this farmland.
It's kind of become a talking point in right-wing media.
I hear it all the time, not only from local media, but also national media. Yeah. But when you actually start digging into the data, it actually shows a very different story, which is, and this is not in only in New York State, this is across multiple parts of the country. But essentially, when you look at the data, it shows that large-scale solar projects are only using like less than 0.1% of USDA prime farmland, and it's actually golf courses and real estate development threats such as suburban sprawl, low density residential housing that's actually using more prime farmland than solar panels.
And part of the solar push in New York is somewhat related to the state moving toward its mandate of 100% zero emissions energy by 2040.
Yeah.
Which I think people are commingling here a little bit, but what are folks saying at like the state level and some other organizations?
I mean, the state mandate is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Just as a reminder for folks, in 2019 the state passed the New York Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which outlined that by 2040 the state has to have 100% zero emissions. But also, like, something to keep in mind is that the state's electric grid is kind of falling apart.
Not in the best shape.
It's not in the best shape. And we're seeing that as everyday consumers. We're seeing our electric bills go up. We're seeing during the summertime more blackouts because the electric grid is already struggling. It's really, really old. And so what we're seeing is that in addition to the demand for electricity increasing, so all of these things coming together, we're seeing that we need as a state to produce more electricity. And we need to produce more renewable energy for a number of reasons, partially because of state mandates and partially because we just need more electricity across the state.
That's Kimberly Eisauer reporting on the large-scale, utility-scale solar development that's been proposed in Sullivan County. It extends between the towns of Thompson and Forestburg. It would be located near the Marcy South power line, a high-voltage power transmission line. And it would also be the largest facility in the Catskills and Hudson Valley, if approved. You can read Kim's report at wjffradio.org. There are links to the application and many other documents. We'd also like to thank the Sunlight Research Desk for providing research for this story. Kimberly, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and we're going to close tonight with a big update on the care center at Sunset Lake. That's the Sullivan County-owned nursing home in Liberty, New York. It has paused new admissions after Infinite Care announced it's ending its consulting role with the facility. The decision comes after years of waiting for state approval that would have allowed the company to become the licensed operator. The move leaves the county searching for a long-term path forward, while raising questions about the staffing, operations, and access to nursing home care for local families. Radio Catskills' Patricia Robayo spoke with Isabel Braverman and Sean Kuhn of the Sullivan County Democrat. They've been covering the story, and they talked about how the county got here, why Infinite Care is stepping away, and what happens next.
So, Isabel, I want to see if you could give us a brief history of the care center. I know Infinite Care took over management, I believe, in 2021. And that was at a time when the county was considering selling the facility. Can you walk us through what led to the decision and what changed when Infinite Care came in and how that brings us to where we are today?
It was in 2021 when Infinite Care came in. At that time, the Sullivan County Legislature was proposing to sell the facility because they said it was in a, you know, a poor financial situation. However, there was a lot of backlash from both the public and from people who worked at the care center, like the nurses, the employees there. And so the legislature ended up changing its course and they put out a bid for companies to come in and manage the care center rather than selling it. So during that time, there was a lot of back and forth with different companies sending in their proposals. Ultimately, they ended up choosing Infinite Care. So they became the...
Well, they're a consultant, which means that they don't really have any ability to make decisions as far as management. They just kind of run and operate the building. Like they're not, well, they don't own the property. They don't make decisions about how things are run. They just run it.
Right.
Yeah, like for example, the employees are still county employees.
Yep.
I guess the goal for Infinite Care at one point was for them to eventually get full ownership of the care center. But I guess they needed a certificate of need. Is that right?
So they sent a certificate of need to the state. I think it was to the Department of Health. And that's what they've been sitting on for 3 years, trying to get their operator's license. The operating license would allow them more hands-on control as opposed to now in terms of staffing and costs and all that. So it makes more sense for them as a business decision. It would also allow them, I think, to make money on the care center as opposed to where they are now.
And it seems like the reasoning that they're pulling out is that it is taking a long time. Sean, do you know why it has taken so long?
You know, we reached out to the DOH and to a few other people, and we didn't really get a response as far as why the application hasn't gone through. It might have something to do with the state of the care center. It might have to do with the consulting company itself, but it's hard to say.
Right. And I understand that in past reporting, the healthcare center received 1 star for like health inspections, 2 star for like staffing, and 4 stars for like quality measures. And like I said in the intro, that as of right now, they're not receiving new residents. Isabel, do you know how long this pause will actually be, and what it actually means for families who may need a nursing home care right now?
We have had a couple of people reach out to us in, you know, the past weeks, many weeks, saying that they were trying to get a family member into the care center. So we know that based on that, it's been closed for a while. And county officials said it will remain closed while this transition happens. Infinite care is still there. So as they transition out, the pause will continue.
Do you know how long this pause will last?
They did not say. I'm sure they don't even know at this point.
Yeah, they just said as long as there's the transition happening that they're not accepting new applicants.
What has been sort of the county officials' reaction to this news?
Well, many of them are not speaking on it at all. You know, we called the care center. We were directed to speak to Dan Hoost, the communications manager for the county. So all of the information is really coming from him. However, we also reached out to the legislator, Kat Scott. She chairs the health committee. So she is part of the committee that oversees the care center. She acknowledged that it will be, you know, a difficult time for the care center during this transition, but she wished Infinite Care the best.
Recent inspection found like some problems involving resident injuries. Can you tell us what did the investigators say happened?
Yeah, it looked like there was at least one patient there that received an injury. They didn't know how the injury happened. It looked like she was, or the patient was lying in bed and reported pains, and then eventually they found an injury. That one's not, I suppose, the more interesting story. The second one, second resident was found with a bruise on her leg, was diagnosed with fractures to both the tibia and tibia and fibula. The inspectors said that they failed to adequately investigate the injuries, which is probably the more interesting part than the injuries themselves. Injuries happen, especially with older people. They could be quite frail. So they failed to investigate and failed to report on both of these incidences.
That's really concerning to hear. You know, the nursing home, I understand, has 146 beds and about 96 residents. I don't know, Isabel, Sean, do you know that occupancy level creates any additional like financial challenges for the county?
I don't think that we can really speak to that. If you look at occupancy rates for hospitals, they're usually in like the 80 to 90% range. So, and I mean, this isn't a hospital, it's a care center. But if, I don't know, they certainly, it seems like they have room. As far as financially, I can't imagine that having, you know, a lower occupancy rate is helping on that front. But I don't think that's probably one of the major drivers of their financial issues.
Looking ahead, what are some of the biggest challenges you think Sullivan County faces as it decides the future of the care center?
Well, I think that healthcare across the county, and I think most of the Hudson Valley, has been a challenge, at least recently since I've been around, probably longer. I know, like, I have plenty of elderly family members in this area, and they always have a hard time finding places. A lot of people end up having to go down to the city or go down to New Jersey or find somewhere else to get healthcare. And as far as elderly care, that's probably an even harder thing to find in this area. So one woman from Bethel was trying to get her mother into an elder care facility for memory care. She has dementia. And she went to this care facility. She went down to Middletown. She went out to PA and couldn't find anybody who could take her mother in. So, I mean, it's a real issue for the county. It's a real issue for upstate New York.
What are the next steps that the county has to take? Did he mention that this will be a discussion at the next legislature's meeting, or is sort of a wait and see?
Yeah, I guess it's really a wait and see situation at this point. I don't know what direction they will take.
Is there anything else we have not discussed that you want listeners to know about this, about what's happening with the care center?
Kat Scott said the transition will happen slowly. She said the transition has not yet begun and that residents and staff will be kept informed of the changes as the county determines its long-term plans for the facility.
I'm definitely sure that folks will come up to the legislature meeting to their public comment, because I remember in the past it's been very contentious during public comments when the care center was being handed over to Infinite Care in the past. So definitely keep your eye on that. So we're talking to Sean Kuhn and Isabel Braverman, reporter and editor with the Sullivan County Democrat. Thank you both for joining us and help us break down what's happening at the care center at Sunset Lake. And we'll continue following this story as the county works to determine what's next for the facility, its staff, and the people who call it home. Thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it. In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Big thanks to Patricio Roballo for that conversation. Thanks to Isabel and Sean with Sullivan County Democrat. And thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole, and that is it for tonight's local edition. We've got 2 hours of Retro Cocktail Hour coming up at 7, Virtual Soundscapes at 9, but you want to stay with us now for The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
No radio? No problem. The Radio Catskill app has you covered. Hear conversations, music, and NPR live, no radio required, and stay up on the latest local news whenever you need it. Download the Radio Catskill app.